Welcome to the latest edition of KleptoCast, the new podcast series from the Kleptocracy Initiative at Hudson Institute. I'm Natalie Duffy, and with me here I have Harry Cooper, a journalist for Politico Europe who has written extensively on the topic of today's podcast, which is the new International Investor Program in Malta. Could you provide a little bit of background on Malta's Individual Investor Program? For example, why it was instated and how it's panned out thus far?
Yeah, well, I think there were talks with the previous nationalist government going on even before the Labour Party won in 2013. The company, I think it was Henley Global, had been advising the government on what a scheme might look like. It was then taken forward in 2013, and MEPs actually realised what was going on and condemned the scheme in January 2014, in which they said that it was outrageous, that it was undermining the notion of European citizenship. And they singled out the Maltese scheme in particular, which is quite unusual because, well, I mean, MEPs tend not to target specific countries. But I think there was a feeling that schemes have been popping up in a number of places. The golden visa scheme in Portugal that I think was up and running at that point, and Cyprus, Latvia. Basically, one of the big things that the MEPs flagged was this lack of a residency link. So basically, as it was initially developed, you would be able to get a Maltese passport without actually living in the country. Now, I mean, I don't know why. Well, I mean, actually, it's quite obvious why they decided to go for this. It's made them a lot of money. An economy the size of Malta's, it's a very small country. The amount of money that has come in from the scheme is in the hundreds of millions. And obviously, I mean, thinking of the size of Malta, it's an island of, I think, around 400,000 people. So this money is a huge amount for a very small country. Now, the cynic in me makes me suspect that this is a very good way of making yourself very popular before election. The money that has been collected, as I understand it, none of it's been spent yet. When it's put into this special fund will basically be able to hand out the cash to whatever it wants to. So I've spoken with a number of opposition politicians in Malta, and they are of the view that this is going to be kind of just, you could say, buying votes. I mean, personally, that's what it looks like to me. And I think it doesn't look good.
So where are most of these investors coming from?
In one of the accusations that was levelled against the Labour government when it introduced the scheme was that it was impossible to know who was coming to the island and who was being given citizenship, and then decided that they would produce an annual list of all individuals who had received Maltese citizenship. Now, the challenge for me as a reporter was this list was available, but it did not identify those people who had got citizenship through the scheme, as opposed to those who had got citizenship by being married to a Maltese citizen, for example. So there's this very, very long list of names, and they were also listed first name first alphabetically. So it was impossible to see family, groups of families. It was a very difficult list to get through, basically. Now, my attempts to get some clarity from the Maltese government, they said, no, we cannot disclose who got citizenship through the IIP because of data protection rules. It was actually very difficult. You could make an educated guess based on the names, and certainly most of the names were Slavic, of Slavic origin, but of course it would not have been possible for me to say this is the specific number of people coming from former Soviet countries. Now, I ended up speaking to Henley Global, the company that runs the scheme, and the conversation I had with this guy was pretty candid, to say the least. He said, yeah, most of them are coming from Russia, the former Soviet countries in the Middle East. And you see this with quite a few of the schemes, actually. The Hungarian scheme, for example, vibrant marketing activities in these countries. So they are specifically targeted at populations that do not have passports that give them much mobility. So countries that, for example, are not part of the visa waiver program in the US, people that really want to have a European passport on the grounds that it gives a much greater degree of mobility than, say, a Russian passport or a Chinese passport. In the context of the Hungarian scheme, I had quite a few conversations with Artan Capital, which is the organization that is more involved with the Hungarians. Armand Artan, the guy, the CEO, he said to me that Chinese people often will get these Hungarian residence cards or passports, European passports, as a status, sign of status. So it's not even necessarily about mobility, it's about status, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yes, that definitely is an interesting way to think about it. And while we're on the subject of the Hungarian scheme, I know you wrote an article earlier this fall entitled Hungarian Hole in the Schengen Fence. Could you describe a little bit more about the Hungarian program and how it compares or does not compare to the Malta program?
The Hungarian scheme was, I found it hilarious, to be honest, because, like horrifying, but hilarious, because Viktor Orban is pretty anti-migrant, to put it mildly. He put up fences, he's like refused to take refugees, he's really sort of been very vocal about, he even called refugee, like migrants, poison. I think he used those words specifically. So I was delighted to come across one Sunday afternoon, this program that Orban introduced. I don't know how long it's been going, not as long as the Maltese program, but that scheme is marketed as the cheapest in Europe, that you can get your residence, your Hungarian residence permit from your local embassy, from the Hungarian embassy in the country you're in, and you never need to go to Hungary. And it's basically, you loan the government, I think it's 300,000 euros that the government then pays back after 5 years. So God knows why they thought it was a good deal for them. I mean, there are all sorts of bizarre connections between the Orban government and the companies that run it. But I mean, that's not something that I looked into much. I was more interested in just showing the contrast between his rhetoric on migrants and actually what his government is doing, which is selling access to the.
Now, as I understand it, these schemes can be seen not just in smaller countries such as Malta and Hungary, but in larger states with more robust economies as well, such as the UK. Can you elaborate on why a state such as the UK would want to employ some sort of program such as these?
I think people in the UK didn't realise what EU citizenship meant. So the Lisbon Treaty is very clear. EU citizenship is not something that stands alone from national citizenship. So you only get EU citizenship by being a citizen of a member of the European Union. And of it being a citizen of the European Union means that you can live and work anywhere in the 28 member states of the European Union. And in the eyes of the law, you are exactly the same as a German, a Spaniard, or an Italian, or whatever. Now, of course, now that Brits are on their way out, suddenly everyone's realizing, oh, we're about to lose our EU citizenship and all the rights that come with that. So it was a suggestion that was mentioned last week by an MEP. And I mean, it was literally just a suggestion and it's not going to get anywhere because it would require treaty change. But basically what this guy was saying is that if a Brit wanted to keep EU citizenship, they could pay a fee. Now, what's funny about this, it's just kind of a separate issue, but this particular MEP has been on record saying no cherry picking of the benefits of EU membership. But he's also then saying, oh, well, maybe we consider this. And in the UK, it went absolutely crazy over the weekend that everyone was talking about it as this fantastic plan. And it's not really a plan at all. I mean, in terms of citizenship as like a citizenship itself is a member state competence. So the EU, the institutions, the European institutions, they are not able to get really that involved in member states who are doing this or offering this sort of scheme. I think European law extends up to 90-day visas. So within that 90-day, for short-stay visas, there's a lot of regulation determined at EU level. But anything about residence, about citizenship, about national identity is very much a member state competence. And so there's an interesting loophole here because countries like Hungary and Malta can offer these schemes and there's not really much the European Union can do. And it really starts to fall flat. Now, again, it's difficult to know what the security implications are of these schemes, but given that you have governments that have reputations for perhaps politicizing institutions, including the security services, the judicial system, and this is not just in Hungary but also in Malta, and the lack of oversight both within countries and by the European Union, it is an absolutely valid question to ask, what are the security implications? Now, the Maltese government has also been embroiled in a huge scandal involving the sale of Schengen visas to Algerian and Libyan nationals, numbering in thousands. It's always very frustrating coming across these stories that no one really realises what's going on. This really gets to the core of why the idea of the Schengen area is great, but the reality is a very difficult thing to enforce.
Absolutely. And so where do you see these programmes going in the next 2 to 5 years?
Well, I mean, I think it very much depends on the country in question. I mean, the Maltese scheme, I mean, why on earth would they stop the scheme? I mean, there's no one telling them to, there's no one outside Malta can stop them. They've raised hundreds of millions of euros already. It's a very easy way to make cash. They have the stamp of approval from these global companies like Henley. The situation, and I think what's interesting for me is in Malta, the nationalist opposition, they've condemned the scheme, but they have guaranteed that they would remove it because it is a great way of making money without doing anything. When I wrote the story back in, I think it was August, there was a lot of very angry people across Europe. But ultimately, I don't really see that particular scheme being wound up, short of there being some massive scandal. The Hungarian scheme is a bit more interesting because far-right party in Hungary, Jobbik, they then started demanding that Orban scrap the scheme. I've spoken to some of the companies involved. They say that the scheme is not being scrapped, that it's rumours put about by opposition parties. But it does seem that the Orban government, at least, is coming under a lot of pressure from a lot of parties within the country. And I think I think this is where it's important to consider the political specificities of the country that you're talking about, because obviously there's a real sort of backlash against immigration in Hungary. So the scheme, the resident scheme that they put in place, looks completely absurd, actually. Whereas in Malta, it's not quite the same. If you can sell passports and you get a lot of money and these people never come to your country and you can spend the money as you like, it's a great deal. It's not just the smaller member states that do this. The UK has one of the most successful schemes. And that's why you have a huge number of Russian oligarchs and Chinese magnates living in London. I think it's important to consider that this industry, and that's exactly what it is becoming increasingly more popular. Something to watch for sure.
Oh, it is an industry indeed. Well, thank you very much, Harry, for all the information. And this concludes another KleptoCast. Check back for more from the Kleptocracy Initiative soon.